First, if you're a marketing expert, what do you make of this for a tough sell? Trying to tell ratepayers that if they want better roads and bridges, they need to pay for them. And that some bridges will be shut altogether and some sealed roads will be relegated to dirt. Now, you can just imagine the reaction to that. But that's the reality as outlined in the 2013 State of the Assets Report into Infrastructure that's been delivered to the Roads and Transport Congress this week. Jeff Rorter wrote the report and he spoke to me from Alice Springs.
It tells us that 12% of our transport infrastructure, roads and bridges, is in poor and very poor condition. And currently, local government doesn't have enough funds to manage all of that. So what we're going to start to do is monitor that and see if it gets worse, or also identifies where we can better target investment.
If you say the roads and bridges are in poor or very poor condition, what does that mean? Is it they're getting towards the end of their life?
That's exactly what it means. It means that they're within 10 years of the end of their life. Some of them are in very poor condition, and for bridges that means load limits and possible closure, and for roads it means that roads have progressed to a stage where we can't just do a resurfacing, we've got to fix the pavement underneath that's damaged.
And are we talking here about your local service roads and smaller bridges, or are we talking about main thoroughfares?
We're talking about all roads that are controlled by local government, and local government controls a very large proportion of the overall road network.
Is this across Australia? Is the problem nationwide?
Yeah, it is. It's right across Australia.
How did we get to this stage?
A lot of these infrastructure assets are very long lives and they're getting towards the end of their lives. Governments have been focusing on growth for a very long time, and some of these assets are getting close to the end of their lives, and that's starting to really hurt councils that haven't necessarily had the funds to be able to fund this from rates and fees and charges.
Felicity Ann Lewis is also with me. Felicity Ann is the president of the Australian Local Government Association. Felicity Ann, thank you for joining Bush Telly. Do the figures in this report come as a surprise or a shock to local governments?
No, I don't think they do. They build on some work that was done last year by Jeff on behalf of the Australian Local Government Association, which was a bit of a pilot, I guess, and used about 40-odd councils to gather some data, which gave us an indication that we were facing a significant challenge, which this further report, which is data now from 344 of the some 500-odd councils across Australia, and has really proved that we are in a perilous position with regard to our ability to continue to maintain and enhance the vital road assets across our nation.
So how many local councils would have the money needed to upgrade this infrastructure or improve it?
Well, I think we've had a good bit of money and support to do asset management planning, and I think councils have got many of them, not all, and I think the fact that we've got 100-odd that weren't able to provide Jeff with the data indicates that I think he said they said that they were too busy to be able to do it, or they didn't have it, and I imagine that these are the councils that really are at the pointy end of struggling to do this. But many of us, and particularly the bigger urban councils, understand the challenge that we have and have plans in place to be able to deal with that and replace our assets in a timely way. But certainly there are others who don't, and they are the people that we, the councils that we need to be lobbying hard for, that are actually able to get the funds that they need to maintain this important infrastructure.
What, lobbying state and federal governments for funds?
Well, that's right. I mean, local government collects 3% of the taxes collected in this nation every year, and the federal government collect 80% and the state's about 20-odd. So it's, you know, we know where the money is, and I know whilst we appreciate that the federal government are having their own challenges, we have to look to the federal and state government for partnerships to actually provide this money. And of course local government would like to see it provided through programs such as Roads to Recovery and the new Bridges Renewal Project announced by the Coalition Government, which sees money coming directly to local government. But as Jeff rightly points out, it's not just about new highways being opened, and the Minister talked today in our video link about the new Bruce Highway. Whilst that's great, we've got to actually replace ageing infrastructure, roads that we've taken for granted for the last 60, 70 years, and we have to renew those, and that will take significant investment.
Jeff, has the change in use of our roads been a factor in this?
Yeah, it's been a really big factor. A couple of mayors have said in the last couple of days they're used to having smaller wheat trucks and milk trucks, and now they look out and see B doubles and B triples. So the the way we use our roads, and now a lot of roads have got combination of heavy vehicles and increasing tourist traffic. So roads that were built for the past aren't suitable for the future. So it's not just a matter of renewing what's there, it's also making sure we do smart investment in infrastructure to meet future needs for transport.
Mm. Now, Felicity Anne made clear there that some extra funds are being sought, but assuming that not all the money that's needed is forthcoming, what do you think the options are?
Well, the options are councils are using asset management plans and risk management plans to live within their means and best target the money they have to get the best possible, the best value result for their communities. But a council can only do what it can within its boundary, and it doesn't make sense to think of a transport network in little pockets like that. A transport network is a national network with a national hierarchy, so it needs a whole-of-government approach.
But has it reached the stage where some assets, the deterioration will have to be managed rather than straight out finding the money to improve the asset?
Yeah, that's happening with some councils. A lot of councils are now prioritising. Councils with timber bridges are putting load limits on bridges. Some bridges have been closed. There are some councils who are prioritising which roads will have gravel and which won't have gravel. So when we look at 18% of gravel roads that are very poor condition, that just means they don't have any gravel. And so if there's wet weather, there's depends on what kind of soil type you've got. School buses don't get to school and people don't get there till it dries out.
Things stop. Have you looked at what this costs in terms of the cost to transport industries or agricultural industries that need to get their produce from a regional area to the cities?
At this point, we haven't yet worked out the multipliers, but they're large. What we have worked out is that there's about $19 million worth of infrastructure in poor and very poor condition, and it's a matter of, over the next 5 years, working out how best to target that $19 million. If you look at benefit, cost and risk, there's a much bigger return than $19 million to whole of government for that investment. If we do nothing and let it go, the loss will be a lot greater than that.
Mm. You're listening to Bush Telegraph on RN, also on Radio Australia. The voice you're hearing there is Jeff Rorter, who's compiled the 2013 State of the Assets Report. Also with me is Felicity Anne Lewis, President of the Australian Local Government Association. Felicity Anne, it'd be a difficult thing for local councils to do, wouldn't it, to tell the local ratepayers that some of your roads are just going to be not up to the standard they have been in the past?
Look, I think it is. And you remember that these people are elected people from within their own community who are having to make these really tough decisions. And, you know, I'm a mayor from South Australia and I've been the president there. And, you know, Kangaroo Island Council, for example, talking about many of their roads, which are, you know, primarily used for tourists, having to make decisions about which of those are going to be closed because they simply don't have the dollars to maintain them in a condition where they can say that they could safely see people transiting over those roads. So, you know, this, you're talking about the economic value to our community for things, not only tourism, of course, but we know farming, farm produce, services, mining, all of those things, and many of those assets, as Jeff's pointed out, are being consumed at a more rapid rate than what the earlier modelling suggested, and for many councils their programming of works have had to be readjusted to deal with that. So yes, these are very tough decisions, and it's not just about business, it's about social things such as schooling and those kinds of things, which communities rely on roads to get everywhere. From the moment you come out of your front gate, you're on a local road, and you need to have the ability to use that road all the time to go about your normal lifestyle. So, you know, it's a critical issue, and it's not new. We've known since about 2006 with the previous PricewaterhouseCoopers study, which told us back then that we had about a $14.6 billion backlog and funding gaps each year of about $1.1 to $1.2 billion. So, you know, we're not surprised by this. People might say, what have you been doing? We've been working really hard to try and get this message. And I think Jeff's work now gives us really good evidence to say why the three levels of government have to turn their attention to this in a really serious way.
I know on this program we've seen how emotive the debate gets around things like grain trucks or mining trucks sharing roads with tourists and local traffic when it's deemed the road may not be up to scratch, not a safe road.
Well, that's true, and we've had presentation this morning from the National Heavy Vehicle Regulator, and you know, there's a lot of work going on there about national road reform and thinking about how we actually get that balance and actually get the particular user of the road actually being able to make contribution to that, and to count for councils to be able to make decisions about which roads are appropriate for which kinds of transport uses. And I think most local councils have heard about this for a number of years and have glazed over thinking it would never happen, but we're assured that it's going to happen, and it's going to happen early next year. It's had a few false starts, but they wanted to be sure that they had proof of concept that it was going to work and that it would deliver for local government and indeed also the states. But, you know, given we manage 80% of the roads, it's very critical for local government to be able to make those calls, because they know their roads and their community and how it works best. And so we're hoping that then we'll also have some opportunities to get some road user charges down the track as well, and be able to put that money into the roads which are being consumed more quickly and that are most used, so that those things can be targeted and specific and done through good evidence.
I wonder if that's more palatable to the local people than rate rises, road user charges.
Most definitely I think it would be, because it goes on that principle of if you use it, then you need to pay for it. And, you know, many people argue with me about the fact that they pay rates but they don't use the library or they don't use the swimming pool. Why should they? So whilst property-based taxes are a bit of a blunt instrument, we know, because we've tried and looked at other models, that it's the fairest overall. It's not without its problems. But we also know that if people do want to use those services, then they need to perhaps pay additionally, because the rates just don't cover that. And I think the same is true for our roads.
There's that old adage, I'm sure you don't like it, that you know, the local council is in charge of roads, rates and rubbish. Is there any justification in the criticism that some local councils have strayed too far from that and put money into services that maybe that cash could have been redirected into these basic needs?
Look, I think every council is, you know, challenged every night that they meet in making a decision about what it is that their community is saying that they want. And, you know, we've had a few people talk about this today. You know, councils represent and reflect what it is that the community say that they want. And you might look back now and say, well, you know, we should have spent more money on our road infrastructure. But I'm sure the council didn't just wake up one morning and think, oh, I think we should have a new library or we should have a new pool. That would have been done because councils have been lobbied by their communities to provide those infrastructure. And, of course, we know that the state government has walked away in many instances from the soft service, the human service provision out in our regions, and not only in our regions but our metropolitan areas as well. But we had a discussion at the ALGA board meeting yesterday about, you know, medical and health services that many country towns are having to provide housing for doctors to get them to be in their towns. So, you know, local councils are in spaces that I don't think they would really want to be in. But if they don't step up to the mark, who's going to? Who's going to put those doctors out there to look after our people in our regions? They deserve to have that good service that we have and take for granted in the metropolitan area.
You're hearing from Felicity Ann Lewis, President of the Australian Local Government Association. Also with me is Jeff Rorter from Jeff Rorter and Associates. Felicity Ann, I take the point here that this is a nationwide problem and it's not something just restricted to rural areas and rural councils. But if ratepayers are going to foot some of the bill here, is it even more difficult for rural councils that would have a much smaller base, a much smaller ratepayer base?
Oh, most definitely. And we know that many of these smaller councils from the major centres are the ones who are more and more reliant on the federal assistance grants and other grants than, say, your big metropolitan councils. So, you know, how many of them see their grants and their operating dollars consumed with governance and a number of the other things that they actually have to do. So they don't have a lot left to invest in the maintenance and even renewal of their infrastructure. So they are increasingly finding it tough, and many state local government and territory associations have done quite extensive work on financial sustainability of local government, and it's not always small councils, but there's a significant proportion that are more remote, rural and regional, that are struggling to be able to remain sustainable. And that is, you know, when you take into account their assets and depreciation and all of those sorts of things. So it certainly is a challenge.
And the pressure they face, I guess, from agricultural landholders in particular that have been saying for years now, we can't afford these continued rate rises.
That's right. So they're in a continual tension because no councillor really wants to put the rates up. I mean, we pay rates as well. Nobody wants to see that. So you're in that, you know, bind between knowing what it is that you need to be collecting. And I think Jeff was giving some really interesting figures about how many millions of dollars it would cost, you know, in rate rises. And that, I think there was a gasp from the audience, Jeff, when you presented that earlier today, saying to state governments, you know, well, we have to put the rates up by this amount. If you are serious that you believe that we need to fix this, this is what it will take. And we know that it's just people just can't afford to pay that. And particularly when you see the economy in a time when it's under pressure and everybody's struggling and we've got, you know, our utilities charges continuing to go up, people just don't accept that their rates should have to go up. And, you know, we have to live with that. And as Jeff has said, we have to live within our means, but therefore we have to do some hard decisions about our priorities. And that comes back to the discussion we had earlier about, do we close particular roads? Do we not maintain some roads to a particular condition? You know, do we do the grading less often? All of those things are the decisions that councillors can take to try and mitigate against rate rises, but it comes at a cost.
Jeff, what was that figure that made the room gasp?
The dilemma for rural councils is that an increase of, for an urban council, of a relatively small amount, like 5 to 10 or 20%, if you have to apply that same effect for a rural council that has much smaller population and lots more infrastructure, you have to multiply that by 2 to 3 to 4 times. And so to get the same effect, you have to get really big numbers, and they're just unreasonable numbers for rural communities because they have so much infrastructure for such a small population. And one of the primary areas there is that most of the economic benefit is primary produce, and most of the revenue from primary produce goes to the federal government. So councils, so land tax for rural community infrastructure doesn't make sense. It's a real problem for rural and remote communities in particular.
So a new model's needed?
Yes.
Yeah. Gee, Jeff, it seems like a gloomy report. Is there anything good to take out of this?
Yeah, there is. There is an opportunity to target expenditure now to get, based on benefit, cost and risk, to get a really good result. This is solvable, and in some instances the answer will be, because what we're also measuring is capacity of infrastructure and function and utilisation. So it's not just a matter of keep everything where it is. It's about how do we best target investment in infrastructure from whole of government, because the community doesn't tell a difference between taxes it pays to local, state and federal. It's all tax.
Yeah, it's money that's not yours anymore, yeah.
And so whole of government needs to say, how do we get a better result on infrastructure? And if we do that, we can actually get some really good results.
Well, Felicity, I guess you've got the ammunition now, don't you?
We do, and an evidence-based approach to me is the way that we need to be going, and I think now this gives us a very strong evidence base to talk to our state and federal governments to develop and build on the road reform projects that are coming our way in the next few months, and see what we can do to increase the quantum but also be a bit more strategic about those issues that have been highlighted. So that'll be our work, I'm sure, in the coming months.
Tough time to ask for more money. So I wish you all the best. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Felicity Ann Lewis, President of the Australian Local Government Association, and Jeff Rorter from Jeff Rorter & Associates. You're listening to Bush Telegraph. You're on RN.